This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Bottom Line Blood Red Podcast, Liverpool Echo, where we take a close look at the stories away from the pitch. This past week has been a major one for the English game, with the publishing of the Crouch Report, the fan-led review into the future of English football. It was a review designed to protect the interests of fans in their football clubs and provide them with greater say, as well as addressing the financial inequalities that exist within the pyramid. For Liverpool, it has also been a momentous few days. Ahead of the curve in relation to the Crouch Report recommendations, Liverpool supporters group Spirit of Shankly passed a motion at their AGM on Saturday after months of discussion with the Reds owners Fenway Sports Group that would require the owner to seek fan consent for major decisions related to tradition, such as trying to join a Super League again or ever leaving Anfield. Joining me today to discuss what's happened is Spirit of Shankly chairman Joe Blott to discuss the relationship between ownership and fans and how that may have changed over the past few days. Joe, thanks for joining us. I imagine it's been quite a busy few days for you.
Hi, Dave, and hi, everyone. Yeah, it has. It's been a busy 7 days, as you said, with the fan-led review being announced last week as well. I think the Football Supporters Association, you know, kind of looked to us for a little bit of leadership on that, around particularly around media issues and the messaging as well, given how far we've come. So full on, really, from a national perspective, and obviously from the local perspective, as you described.
Can you explain how the kind of the terms of the deal we've got kind of on the table here with FSG? Because I know the motion was presented to members at the AGM on Saturday. I know there's an online one still to be passed this week. But what can you explain to us in terms of where we're at with the kind of the terms of the deal which is on the table?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. You have to go back to April when it all started with the European Super League. But then probably, I think it was just in the middle of May, we made significant requests to FSG. To be fair, as I said all along on this, when you get to a negotiating table, you need two sides who want to negotiate. And to be fair, FSG and the local representatives clearly were. So that gave us a platform to build on, really. But we were clear at the outset that we wanted four things. We wanted FSG to pay for any of the legal bills or any of the fines that were coming out, so it wasn't saddled on a club desk. We wanted them to work with us with the National Fan-Led Review, so that we were seen to be, you know, partnering towards that, really, and seeing the synergies between us. We also wanted fan representation on the board. And also we wanted a recognition agreement for Spirit of Shankly as part of that process. So, you know, that was kind of our starting position. And as negotiations went on, I think clearly, very quickly, they were happy to work with us on the fan-led review. Very quickly, they acknowledged and said that FSG would pay for any fines or any subsequent costs of the ESL debacle. So it was really the other two elements that we were working on. So the position we've come to now is that in terms of having fans on the board, we were always nervous about that. For two reasons, really. One is how do those fans get elected, and also how do they get a voice? You'll know, Dave, and many of your listeners will, that FSG is a very complex organisation. It doesn't just run football. It has NASCAR interests, ice hockey, I think, this week as well, and obviously the American football, and clearly from that point of view, our voice will be lost in Boston. It also then has an FSG LFC group, and then obviously has the local group. So you know, quite which board you sit on, to be quite frank, that makes a difference. Secondly, as well, in terms of the current legal position, sitting on a board, your first duty as a member of a board is to the board itself. So any of those decisions that are taken are actually, you know, harnessed on the fan or fans who are on there. So, you know, imagine that fan, you know, walking out of the board meeting on a Saturday afternoon to tell, you know, that we've just sold one of our major players, or, you know, to balance our books or whatever, you know. And despite them saying, I voted against it, you know, the joint and several responsibilities with them. So it was always a dangerous game for us. And acknowledged again by LFC and FSG, to be honest. And what we came up with was a workable model that has board representation at the right level. So we first of all, in terms of going back to the recognition agreement, so they recognise Spirit of Shankly as the supporters trust. They write in that into the Articles of Association, which means that A, it's a legally binding agreement, but B, it's also future proofing, so that if there's a sale of that, then that actually transfers as part of the undertaking. Secondly, in terms of then how to access the board, we've got secured monthly meetings with the local board members. And then secondly, we've got an annual meeting with FSG LFC. So, you know, significant improvements on what we had before. And I've always said that on the Friday before the European Super League debacle on the Sunday, we didn't have a bad relationship. It was, you know, okay, there'd been some flip-flopping along in terms of some of the decisions that have been taken. But by and large, I think we enjoyed a better and more comfortable relationship with the club than many of my colleagues around the country. So what we have is actually, because I think of that platform, we had something to build on. And I'm convinced that what we have now is better than what we asked for, more workable. And more than anything else, it's transferable as well. So I think in terms of the national game we've been referring to before, there's something other clubs can use here and other fan groups can work with as well.
You mentioned the relationship was fairly strong beforehand. Does that mean there's an element of trepidation? Because I know people will look at this and think, well, if the football club wants something to happen, where it be a breakaway league, it would find a way to make that happen. But is this kind of watertight? I mean, do you feel that there is genuine contrition from the very top? I know John Henry's video apology in the days that followed the Super League was, you know, it seemed contrite. So you can only take these things at face value. Is that what the message you've got across or you've received rather since you've been engaging in these talks with FSG, that there is genuine contrition from their side and this is something that they realise this was a major miscalculation of judgment on their part?
Yeah, I think video contrition is difficult to interpret sometimes, isn't it? I think, you know, you put it out there with the best of intention, I'm sure, but it always comes across sometimes a little bit hollow and reflective as opposed to being heartfelt. So it's important that we met with the FSG board members, really, which we did via video link, so we could really impart our thoughts and for them to understand our position, really, and then really come back with a viewpoint based on what we'd said as opposed to what they'd said. So yeah, you know, the element of contrition there I think was real, and they delegated full responsibility to the local team. So yeah, you know, that certainly helps and it works. In terms of those people who have doubts about sort of the level of, you know, I suppose in engagement, the level of consent and how it will work in the future. And there's a couple of points really. I think, yeah, of course, in any of these negotiations, like any union negotiation, you know, the proof's always going to be in the action, isn't it, thereafter. But, you know, in terms of having something that's legally binding, how can they not come to us for consent on those existential issues? They have to, legally bound to. In terms of how that becomes representative, well, the other thing that we've been asked to set up, so this is again a supporter-led group, is a supporters board. And that supporters board will comprise of, at the outset, 16 individuals. If I touch on the fan-led review, interestingly, what one of the things that Tracy Crouch said was that she wanted to embed democratic processes for supporters within the club structures. So we've got that within the Articles of Association because we're a democratically led organisation, but B, the supporters board will also be democratically led. So in terms of those 16 individual representatives, they are representing a whole host of other people. So you've got SOS on that board, you'll have cop-outs supporting LGBT groups, the LDSA, the Liverpool Disabled Support Association, representing disabled fans, Liverpool Football Club Women's Supporters Group, obviously representing women, but also women's football, the official Liverpool Supporters Committees, and also ethnic and minority issues from groups and also faith groups as well. So what we have is the real strength of a mandate that when we ask for support, when the club come to the supporters' concerns, it's not just Spirit of Shankly who will be either saying yes or no. It will actually be a huge, huge swathe of Liverpool football fans from across a broader base. So the Liverpool fan has a far stronger voice now than it had before. And it's led by supporters and not led by the club. The club will still have, and it needs to, it still have ticketing issues and working groups that will need to improve the match day experience of going to a match. They still exist and the club will still run them, but they'll actually feed into the supporters board. So it's almost as though we can strategically focus our attention. So give a quick example. Often if there's a change in legislation or change in tack from the Premier League about access for disabled fans, then the club will come to the LDSA to ask their advice. If there's no change, then 9 times out of 10, they don't go to the LDSA. Well, actually, this is a flip now, because the LDSA can actually set up a strategy. We can work with them. It can become a collective. It can become inclusive. The most important thing, we can take something to the football club that says that this is the 3-year plan that we want for disabled fans. We want more tickets. We want more access. We want different support for them, as opposed to just achieving what the Premier League or the government directive is. We want Liverpool to show leadership and actually be above the norm. And for me, that level of inclusivity is enormous. And we reflect that across the other groups as well, in terms of faith groups, in terms of LGBT, in terms of women. The final bit, just to pause me ramble a second. Final bit is this agreement that we've got isn't just for the men's game. It's for the women's game as well. So if an existential move that says that ground share, ground move, breakaway league for women, they can't do it without fan consent. And I think that's a massive move forward, given that we know that the women's game, is despite it being 100 years old, it's light years behind in terms of its equivalence to the men's game.
It's an argument which is often levelled at ownership, specifically kind of US ownership, that understanding maybe English football fandom is kind of a different concept, because it's very unique what we have over here and how protected we are with the pyramid as well, which all links back into kind of Tracy Crouch's review. Is there kind of do you get the sense? I mean, I'm assuming that these talks with FSG at board level before it came to local level were with the very kind of top staff and the likes of John Henry, etc., that are running the show. I mean, do you feel that this is something that they kind of, after what happened with the European Super League, this is a move to kind of show that they understand that this is, football fandom in this country is something very unique and that needs to be, kind of nurtured and brought on side?
Yeah, I believe so. As I said, the level of contrition that you referred to before, seemed genuine and real. We saw the reaction of Chelsea. So you talk about rich owners and American owners. They're the top six clubs in terms of who were going to the European Super League. Russian oligarchs, Saudi-based organisations running football clubs, and then American owners, as you said. But the solution for Chelsea and the solution for Man City was to put a fan on the board, and that sort of quietened things down. FSG have gone further. They could have just said, "Oh, let's put a fan on the board," but they didn't. They wanted to negotiate and create a model that works for Liverpool, but also is, as you said, the template for the rest of the pyramid, really. And that's the leadership role. That's what we asked for at the outset, and said, you've broken so much here. The fan base, has demonstrated its displeasure at what you did in terms of the Super League. There's a way of repairing this, or there's a way of breaking it. We saw what United did. United protested. We had the game called off, etc. Are they any further on in the discussions? Yes, they are, but it's been torturous. It's been hard. We we as both parties went into it with eyes wide open, really, and hoped for a better deal. And, you know, hopefully getting FSG, as you rightly said, to not only understand, I think, the nature of football, but I think also the nature of our football club, which is about values, it's about principles, it's about collectivism, it's about unity and all those issues. I think, you know, they very often use those as part of the marketing, and it's about how you live them. You can't turn them on and off and turn them off. And, you know, unfortunately, in April, they turned some of them off. And, you know, to be fair, they've been determined to turn them back on again. And that's why we've got the deal in front of us that we have.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
The way ownership groups have tackled this has kind of been different across the board, hasn't it? I mean, as you mentioned just before, Chelsea and City, I mean, there was an idea around that about just fan ownership, presenting a fan on the board. Spurs, rather, would kind of quell the noise being created somewhat. But then you've got Manchester United have gone for kind of more of a fan share scheme. I mean, there's major differences, I think, between what you've got in place with FSG at the moment. Do you think this is the one which is most closely aligned with what the kind of the Crouch report is looking towards here? I mean, in terms of the fans haven't, you know, you're not giving anything away here, and it seems like you've got a genuine say rather than something which is tokenistic and, you know, it makes good headlines. This seems like from the outside looking in, and obviously you've been, you know, key party to these discussions, which have been going on for some months now. This isn't a knee-jerk thing. This is a thorough, thought-out plan that ultimately seems like it could change the face of football at the top level in terms of handing a game which has been, I suppose, fans feel sometimes disenfranchised from, because, especially with the Premier League, because it kicked on so much, it became so massive. This has almost brought the fans back part and parcel of something and having a genuine say. It seems to be have gone the furthest and been most in line with what kind of the recommendations from the fan-led review are.
Yeah, I think that's right. But I mean, there's a massive burden on the shoulders of Spurs to try and carry this, to be honest with you. And I think, you know, it's, you know, one of the reasons we have come so far is because we've been so careful as well. You know, we wanted to make sure that this had a robust argument, really, that we didn't just want to take the first offer that was on the table and deal with that. And again, you know, the club recognised that, the owners recognised that and took it to another level. In terms of the Crouch review, yeah, I mean, you can hold a mirror up to it. Like, you know, there's a huge reflection in terms of what we've got. I think we've got further, to be quite frank, but in a whole host of ways. You know, clearly, in terms of getting embedded in the Articles of Association of the, you know, not FSG, this, you know, in terms of the football club itself, it is absolutely incredible.
And that's huge, isn't it? I mean, because that's a commitment beyond, you know, whether FSG sell their interest in the football club in the future, you know, in the coming years. It's something which is embedded, and it provides a kind of a template for others to follow moving forward.
Absolutely, and I think you know the main thing. I keep saying main thing, and there's so many main things. But this wasn't solving the problem now. This is solving the problem for the future. I want my grandson, my granddaughter to enjoy what I've enjoyed, and to do that, they, you know, they need a strong fan base in order to hold the club to account, and, you know, that's what we've got enshrined in their article. So, you know, it clearly isn't just about them now; it's about protecting the future as well, and that's what we were keen to achieve. I think that, you know, the Crouch review has reflected on some of those. We met with her on two separate occasions, I genuinely felt that she saw so many merits in what we were doing. And I think, as I say, you hold the mirror up and you see so much of it. I think the beauty of the deal that we've got on the table now is that it shows we're ahead of the curve. There's nothing in the Crouch review that I think, oh my God, we've missed a trick there. I think there's other bits that if it comes through, we might get some benefit from. So in terms of some of the heritage type stuff, then we'll take that as a bonus almost. But, you know, the key things about the existential risks to the football club are sorted here. We don't have to go through the governmental process. We don't have to go through the legal process. You know, but I think the national game, it's at a real good point. You know, I used the analogy at the AGM on Saturday. I think, you know, we're at half time here, and the fan groups have scored with Tracy Crouch's help a couple of goals before half time. But we know what happens after half time. After half time, the opposition comes out and gives it a right good go to right what they put wrong. So I fully see legal challenge. We've already heard what the Premier League is saying. We've said what all the clubs are saying. It's not gonna be have a smooth ride, to be honest with you. And it gets into the governmental bits about long grass and everything else. So I think over a period of time, fans have to be diligent and have to keep going on this and make sure that in the second half we win. But I think from a local level with Liverpool Football Club with our collective fan groups, we're about to seal the deal and at the end of it the game's over ahead of the Crouch review.
When going into this in the wake of the Super League fallout, have you achieved kind of what you expected or more than you expected? Because it seems, this is, I know a number of conditions or requests were put on the table when you first went to sit down to meet with Billy Hogan. It seems like a lot of those boxes have been ticked.
Yeah, definitely. We have more, without any doubt. In terms of, as I say, we asked for two seats on the board. We've got better than that because I think, as I highlighted the risks earlier, but what we've got is the contractual arrangements. We've got a recognition agreement for Spurs and Shankly as the go-to organisation. We've got a supporters board that is massively inclusive, but also it has huge spread in terms of its membership. We also have, as we rightly said, what we went into to discuss with Tracy Crouch, Liverpool Echo, the mirrored what we were saying. So, it did. We've achieved more. And I do genuinely think as well that having the women's game at the level as well as part of this is a massive statement from ourselves and from Liverpool Football Club. And to get that onto a level playing field, as it were, in terms of using the analogy, it's massive because, it's so far behind, isn't it, women's football? I think, for us to do that, particularly because Liverpool women's wasn't great, was relegated 2 seasons ago, flying at the moment. And I think part of that is because there's trust and faith that we're actually going to take this forward. And I think taking it forward with the Liverpool Women's Supporters Committee is absolutely massive. And, the starting point for the conversation, funny enough, was that, it's much harder to get a ground and to get playing facilities, to get training facilities, all of those kind of things. Well, actually, the club have recognised that we've got to change that. And to change it as well, the supporters have been in a position at the outset. The reality of this, it's fantastic for me to sit here and to sit at the AGM and to sit at the negotiating table. But this all started 13 years ago with the people who got off the seats and marched and protested against Dix and Gillette. There's a legacy here of everything that they did. I'm in a fortunate position to build on their foundations. And that's, it's hugely important to me, but it's hugely important to them who went before us and did so much to get fan engagement as a forethought, not an afterthought, and here we are. And the forethought for the women's game at the outset is vital, and I think that's really good news.
Absolutely. There was a line that struck me at the AGM. I forget who said it now, but the fear in 2009, 2010-ish was that you were going to be, Spirit of Shankly members were going to be banned from the stadium for their part in protesting what was going on. Fast forward to 2021, almost 2022, and it's a very different landscape whereby you've got a seat at the table and conditions to secure the football club against future, kind of power plays. I mean, that's some turnaround because from being fearful of being thrown out of Anfield for speaking your mind and being true to what you believe in to get into here now, that's quite some journey.
It is, and as I say, for those people who did at the time, you know, I'm absolutely standing on the shoulders of giants here in terms of doing this. And, you know, it's incredibly important to reflect on what they achieved at the time, the risks that they took, as, you know, as fans going into discussions with the football club at the time. And, yeah, I mean, I wasn't actually on the committee then, but, you know, I've heard the tales and heard how difficult it really, really was. But they stuck to their guns and never wavered. And you're right, and here we are now, you know, after all that time, having this as a leadership for the rest of the country, really. And it is, yeah, I mean, it's heartening to see. And it's a healthy relationship because I think I tried to explain at the AGM, you know, in terms of the way we've got the structure now, we have still the spirit of Shankly independence to hold the club to account. The LDSA, they've got the independence to hold the club to account. Cop-outs, exactly the same. We've then got the collective in the middle, which can do strategically, but also still hold the club to account and still be the ones who determine the consent for issues. And then you've got the work with the club, engagement inside the club without actually being part of the club. And I think that, as you said, is quite, you know, unique in terms of what's happened. It's, could you have envisaged that 13 years ago? No. And if you look at the statements of aims on our website, all those boxes have been ticked now, apart from fan ownership of the football club, which is given the price of Liverpool these days, and you know how successful they've been, is probably out of reach in reality, unless something dramatic happens. But apart from that, you know, we've achieved what we set out to achieve. That's incredibly, incredibly important and positive.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, I'd agree with you on that point there in terms of as someone who's had involvement in fan ownership, albeit far further down the pyramid, there's a limit in terms of almost how far it goes. I think you find that a lot of clubs that they manage to progress through, you know, Wimbledon have the conversations now at the moment about how they progress forward, because there is always an impasse reached. It's just football. It's the economics of the game, which are kind of prohibitive to kind of go in the whole hog. I know we'd love to see it, and I know people look to the Bundesliga about 50+1, etc. But it's a whole manner of different things that go into that make them economically viable. But just to tie it all together, I know you're a busy man, and this, you know, I imagine your diary's fairly chocked with media appearances for the next few days. Where are we at now in terms of the motion was passed at the AGM? I know it's still it's online. I think it's till Wednesday, I think. And then, so where are we at in terms of what are the processes that need to be followed until such time this becomes enshrined in the kind of the Articles Association, and we're there and we're home and hosed?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, had we not been in the COVID situation, you know, our AGM probably would have been where the deal was done, but you know, quite clearly not everyone could come for a whole host of reasons. So we felt it was important to host the AGM and to give out and impart all the information that we had, to move the motion, second it, to get it kind of that level of approval. But we felt it was important that all members have an opportunity to vote for it. So they'll be getting emails, as you quite rightly said, on Wednesday. That'll run the voting and run through till Sunday. So hopefully by Monday the 6th, we'll be in a position to know if it's a yes or a no vote. Fingers crossed it's a yes, and then we'll be back around the table with the club, but probably more from a legal perspective. I mean, basically all the heads of terms are agreed now. So our legal advisors will be working with their legal advisors, and, you know, subject to any sort of, you know, legalese and cross T's and dotted I's, we're almost there. And so shouldn't be, you know, a huge wait of time. You know, obviously we're late in the year now, so could it be the end of the calendar year? I doubt it, but will it be early in the new year? Optimistic it will be.
Fantastic. Well, it's been quite a journey. I know it's been a major breakthrough this past week. So congratulations to all involved, and thanks for joining us, Joe. It's like I said, you're a busy man at present, but really appreciate your time and your insight.
You're welcome, Dave, and thanks everyone. And you know, look, Spirit of Shankly have done a lot of this, but we couldn't have done it without the support of so many other of our affiliates. So you know, it's been a huge team effort, and you know, that by working together. I think someone said at the AGM on Saturday, you know, that unity is strength, and it is. You know, that collectivism that other clubs may not have has worked really effectively for us.
Fantastic. Thanks very much, Joe.
Thank you, Dave. Bye now.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.